Welcome, friends, to the True Myth Media Podcast, thoughts and discussion on movies from a Christian millennial perspective. I'm your host, Michael McDonald.
And I'm Seth Steele.
And this week, we're just going to be doing basically an extended rundown of the movies that we've been seeing, because I think we've got enough to talk about a couple of them to actually fill up a whole show. So, Seth, why don't we start off with some of the things you've been watching that aren't like the longer conversations.
Sounds good. So it was the penultimate episode of Barry this weekend, so I watched that, and I am actually pretty blown away by the show now. The last episode had a moment in it that I almost cried because it was so intense. And I feel like the show has kind of struggled to find a tone that it's want to hit. But I feel like that's also kind of what its purpose is to wrestle with that. Because it is really funny, but there are a lot of really dark moments in this, in this show too. And there was an extremely dark moment that got extremely emotional after that. And it was, honestly, I was like, all right, I'm hooked. I'll watch this show till its conclusion now. So, that was like one of my highlights
now,
for the
week.
You
said it was the penultimate. Did you mean for the season or
for
the
season?
Show?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. We've got one more episode this season. And I mean,
I know Silicon Valley is like wrapping up pretty soon too, I think.
I think that, there's a couple more episodes of that left too. But Westworld was really good this week too.
If you haven't seen it.
Okay, yet. I won't say anything.
I think me and Katie will be watching it tomorrow because she doesn't have to work. I don't have to work or tomorrow night. So
okay, cool. Well, I'll get my HBO out of the way there. So I feel like whenever HBO has some new show on, I always go out of my way to try and watch it at least. So
yeah, we just we couldn't get around to it on Sunday.
So. Yeah, no, that's totally.
We had
fair.
Watched a long movie that day. So.
We absolutely did. We'll talk about that one in a minute, I'm sure. I also watched Tully this weekend, which was fantastic. Tully is a Jason Reitman film with Charlize Theron and Mackenzie Davis, Mark Duplass, and Ron Livingston. Okay. It's kind of about a mother of three, and at the very beginning of the movie, her newborn isn't quite born yet. So probably for the first like act of the movie, she's pregnant. And then she gives birth, and it's about her kind of struggling to maintain her sanity while she cares for all these kids. One of her kids, Jonah, which is her middle son, has kind of acute autism.
Okay.
He kind of requires her to brush him with a soft brush every night before he goes to bed, and that's supposed to kind of like desensitize his skin or something like that. But it's a really, really sweet movie, and it makes you think a lot about how much your mom probably did, and you didn't realize, and you're like, oh, I kind of feel bad now for
dude,
all
that's
the
how
crap
I felt
that
after
I
saw Tokyo Story.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm just like this is a. I think I had my review for that one. I said this is a movie that wants you to call your mom after you're done seeing it.
Yeah. If there weren't some language in it, if there weren't like, I think there's some breastfeeding in it and stuff like that too. So there's some like non-sexual nudity. But this is a movie that if I wish I could take my mom to go see it, but I'm not sure if she would be okay with some of the language and stuff like that. Okay. Overall, a really good movie. It's pretty kind of predictable towards the end. I saw the end coming from about 5 minutes after something happens in the movie. Like, it's kind of predictable, but the predictability doesn't negate at all from the impact of what they're trying to say.
Okay.
And I think that's actually pretty cool, too.
Cool.
So yeah, I absolutely recommend that one. I think I posted my review on Monday.
Yeah.
So, and then we also watched Seven Samurai, which.
Yeah, I mean, like, how are we gonna? I can't believe that Seven Samurai is not the topic today.
Yeah.
Because Seven Samurai is such a great movie.
It really is. And it's kind of funny because our other main topic is going to be another movie set in Japan.
Another long movie set in Japan by an auteur.
Yes, exactly.
Like an epic film.
I wouldn't say Silence is as good as Seven Samurai by any means, though.
No, but it's pretty great.
It is pretty great.
So, yeah, we did a month and a half ago, I did like an epic movie day at my place.
Yep.
And then you were like,
Ben-Hur that day.
Yeah. And you were like, well, we should do one with like my epic movie.
Yep. So we did Seven Samurai. And Seven Samurai, for those who don't know, it's a 1953 Kurosawa film. about like kind of a small village that keeps getting raided by bandits. And the bandits, they kind of come by this village right at the very beginning of the movie, and two people overhear that they're going to come back and raid in the fall when their harvest is ready to reap.
Yeah.
So these villagers, they're like, well, we can't have this happen. And they start hiring samurai pretty much, or they get these samurai to kind of help them come in. But, these samurai are all doing this pretty much out of the goodness of their own heart. Like the only thing that they're getting paid is through rice pretty much through the end of, the fight.
Yeah.
And it's a slow burn movie, but it is absolutely, it's so rewarding for those of you that can sit through to the very end. It's divided into two halves, and that first half of the movie, it is all build up. Yeah,
it's all set up for the big fight that's coming.
And it is probably like an hour long fight almost, I would say. Maybe not that long,
and
but
I think, like I was saying to my mom on the phone today, how like this movie is really remarkable because you can sum up the plot of this movie incredibly quickly.
Yeah,
it is villagers getting attacked by bandits. They hire some disgraced samurai to help them, and then they fight. That's it. That's all that happens in this movie.
But it's 3 hours and like 3 hours, 3.5 hours, I think, close to, if not a little bit more than that.
And the reason is because Kurosawa goes into such detail of each character, what their motivations are, and really trying to, I think, unfold the social situation that all of them are in. Like as a country, like there is this, nobody has enough food. And so every single like villager is tackling this problem in their own way. The bandits are tackling it in their own way. The people who live in the cities are handling it in their way. The samurai are all handling it in their way, but each of them is like handling it slightly different. So even with the samurai, you've got some samurai who are doing better than others.
Yeah.
And you've got some samurai who are just starting out their training, and some who like this, you know, they're old and, you know,
but they're good at planning and stuff like that. Everybody has a purpose. It's multifaceted, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like the character intricacies are so incredible. Like, honestly, you could follow one character through that story if you wanted to, but Kurosawa doesn't do that. He follows like all the seven samurai, but then some of the villagers too, and you get it from all aspects.
It's like he took the concept of the film, like started at that basic level that I first started about, and he's like, okay, so then the villagers would be afraid, so we need a character who's afraid. All right, but some of the villagers would feel this way, so we need that villager.
Yeah,
like some of them would be afraid that the samurai are going to come in and rape all of their women, so we need to have a character who feels that way.
And they address and then, all these problems.
Yeah, and then that character, it's like, well, then they're going to make they're going to like try and hide their daughters. And it's like, okay, so we need a character that does that. We also need a character who doesn't try and hide his daughter. We also need, like, it's just each viewpoint gets a character.
Yeah. They all become kind of archetypes almost of like what they're feeling. But it goes so much beyond that. Like, the cinematography in this movie is just outstanding. Like, I feel like I could talk about that for like an hour.
Like the way that when the camera moves and it just reveals.
Oh, yeah.
Like or the way that people move into a frame and then out of it and then back again in the background of the frame.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy.
Well, and Kurosawa is known, I guess, for using weather a lot in his films. Yeah. And I feel like this one kind of culminates in the big battle where everybody's in the rain.
Yeah.
And I mean, this movie was made almost 70 years ago. Okay, it's 65 years ago, I think, this year, actually. And I mean, you watch it and it is the most beautifully shot scenes in the world sometimes, because there will be people down in the foreground who are fighting, but then there's more people way in the background that are still doing something incredible. Like you could, in the battle scenes in this movie, you could watch different parts of the screen multiple times and see different things every single time.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. Like, and also like, it goes into all these layers of all these terrible things that are happening and the dire plight that they're all in. And like, even the bandits are kind of in that plight, because if they ever back off, then they're going to starve.
Yeah.
So like, everybody's in this terrible situation. And so it sounds like it would be just the most dour and solemn movie, and it's not.
No.
Because there are characters in here who are funny.
Yeah.
And so much fun to watch.
Yeah. It's almost like it's almost out of place when you first see, like, I'm sure we're thinking of the same character. I have no idea what the guy's name is.
I think
is,
it's Kukichiro.
Yeah. I think you're, yeah.
Yeah.
But like some of the stuff he does, you're like, how does this belong in this movie?
I know.
And then you keep watching it and you're like, no, he totally deserves to be in this movie because without
and
him,
he's
it would
the
not
best character.
Yeah.
Like, he's the one that the whole movie kind of hinges on.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
But he is so outrageous, and like he carries around this sword that's like twice the size of everybody else's sword.
Think anime. Like that's really what it is.
So
it's ridiculous.
It's so outlandishly large. And it's just like he looks like a little boy trying to hang out with the men.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah. It is really awesome. I think we were talking about this a little bit. We were like, we should just do a Kurosawa deep dive eventually. And
yeah,
I think
because most
should...
of his because I think this is his longest movie.
Yeah, it is
so
actually. I went through and checked after we talked about it. So yeah,
because not all of his movies are 4 hours, folks. So
he does have
some
a lot
of them will
of,
be a little more accessible to you.
2.5 hour ones though too. I've noticed
2.5 hours is very doable for
it is
for a good story.
And actually, like Rashomon's only like 1.5 hours. So if you haven't seen that, you really have no excuse. You should go out and
and Rashomon is also like if you start getting into film stuff, it is so commonly cited
in film reviews
that come out. Like Last Jedi has Rashomon homages in it. Like that's a movie that if you're at all interested in film, you should really check out.
I mean like there's Kurosawa films and then there's Kurosawa films, and like Seven Samurai and Rashomon are like the top ones, I would say, for me at least.
The first one I ever saw was Ron.
Okay.
So
and I still
I
have yet to
one.
Watch that actually. So
but
that's based on King Lear though too,
yes,
right? So
it is.
Okay, cool.
But that's a really beautiful movie, especially cuz that one in Kagamusha, the color, the way that he uses color in those movies are great. Cause like Seven Samurai is black and white. Like most of his movies are in black and white.
Yeah.
So
up until like almost the late '70s, I think. Cause was Dreams the first one that was in color?
I don't know. I haven't seen that one.
Okay. Cool.
So yeah, I'm thinking that someday we might do a deep dive on him too. Cause that was definitely, definitely worth watching. And if, you know, even if you have to watch it in a couple of sittings, try and take a stab at like, you know what? Split
That's
it up
how in, I watched it the first time, honestly.
Split it up into half hour to 1 hour segments and like treat it like a Netflix show and binge watch it. You know, like just, hey, I'm going to watch 1 hour tonight and tomorrow I'm going to watch the next hour.
Yeah, it is absolutely worth doing. So
yeah, cool.
And then I watched Silence, but that'll be our deep dive discussion in a minute. So what did you watch this week?
All right. Well, obviously I watched Seven Samurai.
Yep.
I also watched Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films.
Oh, okay.
So
the action producers, right? The ones that they always talk about Letter Media?
I've seen this movie before.
Okay.
It's a documentary following Canon Films, who were the purveyors of some really terrible movies.
Just like trashy, pulpy action movies in the 80s and
70s. And basically, it's these two guys from Israel who made a movie there that got some critical acclaim. And then they decided that they were going to try and do, like, they were kind of the Israeli Hollywood.
Okay.
And now they want to be real Hollywood. And so they just start churning out terrible movies. And the reason that they kind of give in the movie or in the documentary for how this happens is basically they're just great salesmen. So what they would do is they'd go to places like Cannes and they would start like selling ideas for movies that they literally were just coming up with off the top of their heads. And then once they got funding for one of those ideas, then they'd have somebody write something.
And that's very obvious from if you've seen any of their movies. I've actually gone out of my way to watch a couple of these movies just because Red Letter Media suggests them.
Yeah, and actually one of my favorite bad movies of all time, The Apple, is
okay,
one of
I haven't
theirs.
Seen that one, that but I'll go out great. Of my way to watch that.
But they made like the, what was it?
They made like Death Grip. Did they make Terror in Beverly Hills or was that somebody else?
I don't remember. I can't. They all sound like the same movie
death
because
grip,
it's just like a combination of death, Blow, Gun. Yeah. It's just like a randomly
high,
like,
stakes something. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
All of the movies are like that.
Yeah.
But it's just a really interesting look at kind of the how schlocky movies got made.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. There is quite a bit of nudity in it because they're talking about Canon films and Canon, you know, had a lot of that in their movies. Oh, the other one that I was just thinking of, Life Force, is another one that they did too.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just really, it's really interesting. It's kind of like the movie Heart of Darkness, how it looks at how Apocalypse Now got made.
Except
it's like that,
except
for
made.
Bad movies.
That's great. That's so awesome. I may have to check that one out, actually.
Yeah, it's a fun one to just put on in the background while you're, you know, writing or something, if you can do that or whatever. The next movie I've got on here is Batman Ninja.
Oh!
Because it came out today on DVD.
How is it?
And
I really wanted to see it.
Because I work at a video store, I get to see the movies ahead of time. So
wait, should we preface this? So Batman Ninja is an anime movie where Batman is set in Japan, and he's literally a ninja. It's I've only seen the trailer, and I've only seen the Japanese trailer too, so I don't even know anything about this movie, but I was like, this looks ridiculous.
And that's really all that's selling it.
Yeah.
Like, that's all anybody knew about it until it came out.
I have not seen any reviews or anything.
Also, like, the DC movies are terrible, but the DC animated stuff has some real quality in there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of another reason that it grabbed my attention.
Yeah.
Man, I wanted to like this movie.
Yeah. Oh man, that's too bad.
I think if you like anime, you might be fine with it. Like, you're more of an anime fan than I am.
I am, yeah.
And I felt like they actually should have called it Batman Anime.
Yeah.
Rather than Batman Ninja.
Okay.
I actually didn't finish the movie.
Okay.
Because
it wasn't that good, huh?
Yeah, like, and Batman's just got too many gadgets for me. Like, he's not, like, maybe he does get them taken away eventually, I think. So it's maybe more ninja-like at that point.
That's fair.
But it does seem like, I don't know, like, he's got too much. Like, there are scenes where he has the Batmobile.
And isn't this supposed to be, like,
yes,
in, like, 17th century Japan or something like that?
So the setup for it is, at the beginning, we join in the middle of a battle.
Okay.
And somebody is like powering up some device, and basically it's like at Arkham Asylum. So all of the Batman villains get sucked into this thing, and then Batman does too, and they all end up back in time. But Batman doesn't show up for 2 years later because he was delayed.
Okay.
So
I almost don't, like, I didn't know the setup at all, and now I kind of,
yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that setup either.
I know, and
it sounds
also
almost too comic booky for me, and, like, that's going into a comic book movie, so.
Yeah, and so, like, that really, I felt the same way about it. Then he gets there, and I'm thinking, like, okay, he's going to be a ninja. He's kind of stealthing around, trying to figure out what's going on, and it's like, no, as soon as he gets there, it's, like, he meets up with Selina Kyle, who basically tells him, hey, I've been waiting around for you for 2 years.
That's the Catwoman, too, for those who don't know.
In the
just for those who aren't that
like
prolific.
As conversant.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, Catwoman is there, and she's like, hey, just so you know, take feudal Japan, and instead of having all these feudal lords, you've got each one of Batman's rogues gallery is now a feudal lord. They're all battling to be the king of Japan. So,
okay,
like, they literally know from the beginning, like, Penguin's over here, Two-Face's over here, Joker's over here. Like, they know exactly where in the country everybody's at from the beginning of the movie. I'm just like, this is not cool.
Yeah.
The one thing that I really liked about the movie, though, is the artwork.
The animation style, and that's kind
not
of what
the animation.
My eye, but okay,
not the animation. The animation is very like that computer generated 3D 2D thing, where like you can see like Joker has like the crazy hair, right?
Yeah.
And it's obviously made up of about 12 to 20 pieces that are individually animated, but they're all like floating and stuff, and it just looks really
bad.
Yeah, it doesn't look great. But if you take stills, mm-hmm. the artwork is amazing. Like, the style of the artwork is great. It's just the animation that fails it.
That's too bad.
So, yeah, I really wanted to like it.
Yeah.
But I
see,
didn't.
And I think I actually might have mentioned this one to you, because I, like, this was one that I was like, I've never seen anything like this. And I honestly, I've never
so
had,
cool.
yeah, I've never had any interest in watching any of the animated DC movies at all. I know people tell me they're good. I yeah. know, blah, blah, blah. I just don't care. I really
well,
don't.
And once you start watching them, you'll have to watch them all.
Exactly. And I'm like, there's other things that I can watch, but this one kind of caught my eye. So I'm kind of disappointed to hear you say that,
yeah.
but that's okay.
I don't know. I think if you like anime, you might want to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Cause I've, like I said, I didn't finish it.
Yeah.
You know, I've got no idea where it goes.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, I watched, with my wife, I watched It.
What do you think of that one?
I'm not a horror movie fan. I'm not scared of clowns. Like,
yeah.
This movie's never really scared me. Katie really likes it. It's, I think she saw it when she was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I think it's got some nostalgia fear.
Oh, you watched the
her.
Original one with Tim Curry?
No.
The
but,
new
like,
one? Okay.
Even the new one carries over some of that.
Yeah.
For her.
So did you not like it that much, or what did you think of it?
I think there's a couple of scenes that are really well done.
Yeah.
But overall, I don't think Stephen King's writing comes off well on film usually.
I would completely agree with you. I actually, there are very few Stephen King adaptions that I actually think are worth watching.
Yeah.
And the ones that are like the ones that don't really follow the book that well.
Yeah.
Like, I still think like Stand By Me is like one of his best ones.
Yep,
and
great.
Like the ending for that book is so much more depressing. Like they go through how all of the kids die at the end. And you're like, why did I need to know that? but then like The
if
Shining.
You, like,
yeah.
At the end of Harry Potter, instead of flashing
forward.
Is that the flash forward is just like so much farther forward that it's all of them dying.
It's like him laying in a hospital bed the last few breaths. I should have joined the dark side. That's just croaks right there. I don't know. What do the wizards call the dark side? Isn't it just I'm gonna go with
I
that.
I think they're Death Eaters. But those are just
followers
of Voldemort.
Yeah, that's just them.
There is no like universal
light and dark side.
Yeah, I don't think there is anything like that.
A wizard went bad.
Black magic.
Yeah.
The curse.
Yeah, but
they?
There's only like three deadly curses, right?
Yeah.
So like, I mean, that's not that
just
fair.
Stay away from those.
They don't
three
have
things.
That big of an arsenal then. Like yeah. what are the bad wizards really working with?
So then I saw King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Heck yeah. This was one of my guilty pleasure movies from last year, by
and
the way.
I can totally understand why.
This,
like, this movie is bananas.
Garbage, too, it but
is
it is so much fun.
It is so weird. I mean, like, I can't tell you how many times I said to Katie, wait, what's going on right now?
But you have to admit, there are some good scenes in this
there
movie.
There are. But there is some
really bad scenes too.
Yeah, like and really some really bad graphics.
Oh yeah, there's some like you're flashing back to Matrix Reloaded where like he's spinning around on the pole and it looks like N64 video game, like where he's just
yeah.
like killing people that way. Like it's pretty bad at
this
some
is
points.
The sort of movie that I feel like should be playing like in the background of a party.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
like you can literally drop in and not need to know everything that's come before it, and there'll probably be like a whole story that plays out in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah,
that's completely unrelated to anything else that happens in the movie.
It's very episodic. It's really weird because it starts off when like he's a little boy,
yeah,
kind of, and then like his father dies kind of,
and you don't need to know anything about the Arthurian legends because they're not going to follow any of it at
no.
all.
No, it's kind of just like we have this fantasy world and we kind of want to introduce some people, but let's just throw King Arthur in there because that's a name and people will go see this.
Yeah, literally the things that, I mean, there's so little that bears any semblance to the actual Arthurian legends,
mm-hmm.
like other than
names.
Arthur pulls out a sword.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and a couple of names. But mm-hmm. other than that, it's just its own story. Really, it's a shame that it was burdened with being called King Arthur. Like, I understand that, like, you want to get that buy-in for audiences to come in, but I feel like I would have actually given this movie way more credit if I hadn't gone in looking for an Arthur story.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the Arthur legend is kind of gone back and forth in different ways. I mean, like, we had Excalibur back in the 70s, but that was, like, the last... I mean, and that's... That's okay.
I would rather watch this than that.
Yeah, I actually would too. That one is long and drawn out, and Patrick Stewart's in it, and it's really funny for a little while.
What about First Night with Richard Gere?
You know, I that one's, and Sean Connery too. Yeah. That one's not that good either, actually. Clive Owen's one actually is another guilty pleasure movie of mine.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. That one's all right.
It does have some really good moments. There's actually a lot of really good battle sequences in that one, and it's the guy Fuqua. I can't think of Antoine Fuqua, the guy that did Training Day, and it's like super gritty at some points, and it just was not what I expected from a King Arthur movie. This one is a little bit more cartoony at bits,
but also I don't know, because they obviously trying to stay away from an R rating.
Yeah, but the,
aren't they? Oh no,
oh,
it is
they,
rated.
No, it's definitely PG-13.
Are you sure? Because like they, I couldn't remember how much they, because they use modern gang slang, but yeah. I guess they don't use the swears as much.
No, I don't think they really. I mean, they
but that's
might
one
a
of the
bit,
weird
yeah.
things about the movie. If you don't know that it's directed by Guy Ritchie, the guy who did
Sherlock Holmes specifically, if you're
Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, mm-hmm. Snatch. Like those are
like all the gangster like London gangster movies.
Yeah. And if you don't know that going in, you're just gonna be like, why is everybody this? Talking like a modern Londoner?
Yeah.
Why is King Arthur the leader of a gang?
Yeah.
And it's because that's the kind of movie that Guy Ritchie makes.
But he makes them really well, actually. Yeah. Like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrel is great, and so is Snatch, actually.
I can't imagine what I would have been expecting from this movie if I hadn't known that the guy who made Snatch and Sherlock Holmes was making this.
And see, actually, I think the reason I went to go see this movie in the first place was because of Guy Ritchie. Because I typically enjoy...
That's the only reason I watch it, because I heard it was terrible. And Katie wanted to watch it. And I had specifically said, no, I'm not watching it. But then, like, Guy Ritchie, I like Guy Ritchie. And eventually, that wore me down.
Yeah. And like I said, there are a couple good scenes in that movie. Like, when he's growing up, it's really well done. It's like a montage scene, but the way they do it is pretty incredible.
They
actually
grow him up from about like 3, 4, or 5 years old.
Yeah.
Up to like, I think it goes forward like 18 years.
Yeah.
And they do it in about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And you totally get it.
Yeah. You see him working like his butt off trying to get all this stuff done. And, like, you see him growing as a swordsman, as,
you
like,
see him becoming close to other people. Like, mm-hmm. It's just really well done, that scene.
Yeah. And there are some other scenes that I would argue are extremely entertaining. I don't know if they're extremely well done, but I'm going to keep coming. I think I brought this up to you, actually, when you were over on Sunday. But the Darklands scene, it's so ridiculous. I was literally laughing in the theater, but it's so much fun. Like, it's just like him running around, and then all of a sudden he's fighting like a snake that gets picked up by an eagle.
Okay, it's like if you've ever played Dungeons & Dragons, and how, like,
except extremely fast paced. Yeah, like, I'm sorry, like the fighting part in Dungeons & Dragons is what takes the longest.
Right, but like if you were to take, or say Lord of the Rings, it's literally like
taking snippets of Lord of the Rings and being like, here's the Watcher in the Well. This is what they're going to fight now. And then, they're fighting the Balrog now. And then, you know,
like,
what? Oh, we're going to go fight the Uruk-hai at the very end.
In another series, in another, like, intellectual property would have been its own movie.
Yeah. And they
and
just
this,
brush over it like it's
this,
no big deal.
It's like 5 minutes long.
Yeah. And that's what I kind of loved about it, because I literally was like, what is going on? Like, he just fought so many like level 10 bad guys, and we're just going to drop it back down like it was no big deal. I think we've talked about King Arthur Legend of the Sword for too long, considering how bad that movie actually
is.
That's
okay.
Okay,
so then my last movie before we get into Silence.
Okay.
Overboard.
You know what? Okay, no, I read your review on this one, and I need to hear your opinion, because I think on Friday I looked at IMDb scores, and it was like a 3.2, and I sent it to you.
I think it's at
like,
a 4.7.
Yeah, I was like, good luck, man.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
Yeah, so you actually kind of enjoyed it. You said more than the Avengers movie, actually, which still makes me laugh, but that's okay.
I like it more because it has more character development. It is also not 3 hours long. So Overboard is a remake. Like, this movie has so much going against it. Like, I got out of the movie and was literally like, Seth, I don't know what's going on. Something's wrong with me. I think I liked that movie. Because it's a remake of a Kurt Russell Goldie Hawn movie.
Yeah. From like 87, I think it was.
Yeah. And in basically, it's the story. This is of a rich, like, spoiled playboy who is on a yacht and has some mechanical trouble, and they put into this, like, little town to get it fixed up. While they're there, they're going to clean the carpets because he sprays champagne everywhere. And they hire a cleaning company to come in and take care of the carpets. And it is Anna Faris.
Mm-hmm.
She is a single mom who's working three jobs, has three children, and is also trying to study. And she's got like a month and a half left.
Okay.
To get her nursing degree.
Okay.
Or nursing program or something like that. She goes and cleans the carpets, and this guy is a total jerk, refuses to pay her. And when she says that, like, then I'm not getting off the boat until you pay me, he pushes her off the boat, throws her equipment after her, and says, what are you going to do? And drives away in the boat. So she loses her job. She owes the cleaning company a bunch of money for the carpet cleaner. Also, her mom, who helps out with her kids, she decides to blow that off for some, like, weird, like, she's an eccentric character who is clearly just, like, being weird and leaving.
Okay.
So she's kind of behind the eight ball and doesn't know what to do. Meanwhile, this rich playboy guy, he gets drunk and falls overboard and hits his head on the way down and washes up on shore the next morning.
Luckily, he didn't drown.
Yes. Well, it's...
No, I'm sorry.
No,
continue.
Go for it.
No,
man.
No, no, no.
I gave you enough. I gave everybody who likes Avengers enough grief about plot holes.
No, that's fine. Go for it.
So he washes up on board or on shore, and she finds out because of another ancillary character who happens to see the news about it, and he's like, "Oh, look at this," and she's like, "Oh, that's the guy." So she decides that she's going to pose as his wife because he has amnesia and basically be like, honey, like, you don't remember me? Well, this is our home. These are our kids. And this is your, like, she's got a friend who has a construction business and, like, will take him on.
Okay.
Like, and like, hey, this is your job. This is your, like, and like, this is a guy who's never worked a day in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the setup for the movie. It should not be. It is not a great movie. Like, okay. Don't get me wrong. That's the thing is, like, I'm trying to thread a needle right now of, like, this is a silly movie.
Yeah.
It is very silly.
Yeah.
A lot of the humor, I don't think, works real great. But there is something really charming about this film. The first thing is the main actor, who is a guy that probably most of our audience will never have heard of. His name is Eugenio Derbez.
Mm-hmm.
He is a Mexican actor, and I had never heard of him before I started working at Family Video, because he's got a bunch of movies, actually, that are, like, targeted at Mexican families in the United States.
Okay.
And also, so, like, they always come out in Spanish, and they're usually straight to DVD releases. Things like How to Be a Latin Lover.
Well, that got a theatrical run, didn't it?
I think it did. Yeah. Instructions Not Included, I think, also did, actually.
I think so, too.
But, he's had a ton of those kinds of movies. And I've always felt about him the way that I've felt about, like, the Madea movies. Like, they're
just not
for me.
Yeah.
Yep, this is, like, I'm not going to get this. And to a certain extent, even in this one, I don't get some of the humor.
Mm-hmm.
But... he's really great. Like,
a charismatic actor.
He really is. He holds this movie when it has no right to be held. Like,
and I guess because you had mentioned this last week when you said that you were going to go see this. And I guess just from the fact that he's got, what, three like American releases now with theatrical runs.
Yeah.
Like that's got to say a lot about just his charisma right there. If he's able to come up from Mexico and have three like relatively decent releases. Cause like I heard about How to Be a Latin Lover a couple times.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is never going to be something I'm going to see.
Yeah.
But I'm
never
stopped
renting at
yeah.
work.
Like,
it's
yeah.
It's always in and out.
So.
Yeah. And like, he's very, like he plays the part, he plays both parts really well. Cause he needs to play, first off, somebody that you hate enough that you think it's okay what Anna Faris does to him.
Yeah.
yeah. But then he also has
to be pretty bad in order for me to be okay with that. But
yeah,
that's okay.
But then he's also got to be sympathetic enough that you want them to end up together.
Yeah.
And in the I just think that like it's also very cleverly written in parts.
Okay.
Because it's like it knows what movie it is. The people who are writing it, they understand how ridiculous the premise is. So they kind of seed in characters who will kind of comment on that. So like one of the guys that works at the pizzeria, he loves watching the telenovelas, and he'll basically like his whole thing. Everybody teases him about liking these outlandish storylines and stuff. And he's like, no. Stuff like that happens all the time. You don't understand. And then like, that's why they find out that he's got amnesia. Cause he's like, one day he comes into work. He's like, guys, you wouldn't believe it. See, even in our small little town, a guy with amnesia, like it's because he's trying to justify this ridiculous
obsession
with
soap operas pretty much.
Yes. And at the end of the movie, like when they're on this yacht and like this guy's family is like trying to take him back and like bring him back to the rich life and everything, like they're watching like all the deckhands and stuff and are watching on the security cameras. So they're literally all gathered around a TV.
Okay.
Like watching like this rich family going through these crazy antics.
Yeah.
And like there's this poor girl who he's really in love with, but the father doesn't approve of. And it's just like it's a straight up soap opera story.
Yeah.
And like so they're definitely aware of it.
Yeah.
And like so that kind of lets me go, all right, they're not trying to pull one over on me. So I don't have to like scrutinize it the way I would another film that's just like very earnest about like this. They get it.
Cool.
The other thing is that this movie is very charming and has a lot of heart in the fact that, I'm really hard on sometimes the American version of like the love story and like how usually it's very lust driven. It's very like ephemeral and like it ends when people. Like it used to be those movies ended when people got married. Now they end when they start dating.
Yeah.
You know, this is a movie where like the main character is not a hunk of a guy and the girl is not a supermodel. These are people in their 30s who their best years are behind them. Even the rich guy, like, you know, he's partying and schmoozing. But if he didn't have money, he wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Like, and so, like, when they end up together and he ends up, like, forming a connection with, like, the daughters and stuff. And, like, for one of these girls, like, he's the only guy that's ever been in her life as a father. So, like, they form real attachments. And when he leaves his billions to stay with Anna Faris at the end, he's not just staying with Anna Faris because she's hot and they had that one great night. It's because, you know what? I really prefer working construction, coming home and making dinner for my family of three girls and my nurse.
Wait, he gives up his billions of dollars, though?
Because his father won't give them to him if he leaves.
Oh.
So, but I would say that this is where the movie pulls its punches because they do find a way around that.
Okay.
But I think that it's more charming if they don't.
You can't just rewrite the movie, though.
Yeah. But I really thought that, like, that idea of somebody falling in love with the family life
mm-hmm.
is pretty unique today.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Like, I felt like that sort of idea, actually, if you had told me it was written in the 60s, I would have believed it.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
if you're up for that kind of thing, you don't want to think too hard. It really is worth your time.
Yeah. There you go. I don't know if I'll see that one, but
I don't blame
I'll
you.
I'll trust your opinion on it.
I think I have talked a couple of people into seeing it. People who should see it. Okay. I'm not going to try and talk people like you or like
you should try and talk Chad into seeing it.
Yeah, I'm not going to try and talk Chad into seeing it. But like my sister-in-law said that she wants to see it.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I think my mom would enjoy it too.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a movie my parents might enjoy. So yeah. There you go, mom and dad.
Yeah. Also remarkably clean.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, like there's he's got a couple of girls in bikinis at the start of the movie. And I think that's the extent of the sexual, like there's not even really any sexual joking in the movie.
Well, that's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Is that something he usually does? I guess how to be.
I don't
Latin
know. I haven't seen his other movies,
like that. But
he is targeting specifically like Mexican families in mm-hmm. America. So that makes me think like. Those people tend to be here for the reason that they're earning money for families. They're mm-hmm. very hardworking people. They're usually family people. So it kind of makes sense to me that he's making that this movie is geared towards families.
Yeah, no, that does make sense.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's almost everything that we've been watching this week. We're going to get into a little bit of Silence.
Yes.
The movie by Martin Scorsese.
Yep.
Why don't you kind of walk through why we decided to do this movie?
Okay, so this was actually our first request that we got through Facebook. So, and we're always happy to do that. So if you guys ever have movies that you want to see us review or talk about on the podcast, we will be happy to do that. We might take a couple weeks to get it done or maybe even a month, but we will definitely get to it eventually.
Yeah, and this is a movie that
we both had seen, actually, I believe, too.
Yep, but I think we both rewatched it.
Yep, we did.
And one that actually I figured we would eventually get to anyway because of the subject matter.
Yeah. This is a heavily Christian film, but it's not one that like is marketed by focus on the family or pure flicks or anything like this. This is done by Martin Scorsese. And it's not the first time that he's looked at kind of religious iconography in some of his other works, because he also did Last Temptation of Christ. Which was
way more controversial than
yes.
this.
Even for different this, reasons,
even
though,
this
yeah.
is, even this is a bit controversial with some people, but not like that was.
No. Yeah, I guess the ending of Silence could be a little bit controversial. And actually...
Well, and also the fact that it is about... We'll get
the distance of God, more or less.
Well, and it's about an apostate priest. Like,
yes.
It's about a person who denies God.
Yes, but the reason... Yeah,
I know.
We'll get into it. Okay,
it.
I'm sorry.
We'll get into it.
All right, so pretty much it's about two Jesuit priests in the 17th century who their mentor kind of goes inexplicably missing.
Father Ferreira.
Yep, Father Ferreira, and he's played by Liam Neeson. The two priests are played by Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver. Andrew Garfield is from Hacksaw Ridge and Never Let
Amazing
Me Go.
Amazing Spider-Man.
Yep, Amazing Spider-Man, if you've seen that. Adam Driver is from Last Jedi from Star Wars. He's also from HBO's Girls, if you guys watch that, which is a fantastic show, and I absolutely recommend it. Just that little plug right there. Anyways, so these two priests, they travel to Japan during the 17th century when Christianity was outlawed and actually punishable by death.
And extremely, like,
grueling,
persecuted.
Yes.
Like, this wasn't a situation where it was outlawed, so you just kind of kept it quiet. It was like, they were hunting Christians.
Yeah. Like, for much of the movie and much of the book, actually, too. It's also based off a novel by I don't know how to pronounce his name correctly. So I'm not. It's Shusaku Endo. So I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but you can yell at me later if you want. But it's pretty much these priests get to Japan and they stay in a village right outside of Nagasaki. And for the first probably half of the movie, and they're pretty much
just
confined to a hut.
There's kind of like two halves to the movie.
Yep.
There's like them in hiding
and like kind of doing baptisms and like preaching kind of to smaller people and stuff like that. But that's pretty much all they're doing is hiding out.
They're ministering to people.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second half of the movie,
they get caught.
Yeah. Or Andrew Garfield does. He finds out later the other guy gets caught. But
yeah. But he gets caught. They're kind of almost betrayed by like one of the
Kachikiro.
Yeah. By one of the Christians who this Christian is kind of having a crisis of faith. He keeps going back and forth. He wants to be a good Christian, But every time he faces persecution, he kind of gives up his faith.
He's terrified of dying.
Yeah.
Basically.
And, I mean, it's easy to sympathize with him when you see the horrible things some of the Christians are going through.
His character is so great.
Yeah, and it's really heart-wrenching, too, because you see that he really does love God, but he's just...
So
he's more afraid of death than he is of than he loves God, I guess.
Yeah.
And I
like there's a scene in it where he says to the father, he's like, years ago, I could have died a good Christian. Why did I have to be born now?
Yeah.
It's not fair.
Yeah. And yeah. And there's a lot of wondering why God allows horrible things to happen to people in this movie. And that's something that Rodriguez, the main character, Andrew Garfield's character, really struggles with throughout this whole time. Because after he's captured, he's taken away, and he's pretty much just set in a cage for most of the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And he watches...
They, like, cart him around to see things that are happening.
Yep. So, like, they go to the beach, and that's when he first sees Andrew Garfield's character... Adam Driver's character again.
Father Guerrero.
Yep. And they take Christians out into the sea, and they're rolled up in mats, and they just push them off the boat, and they just let them drown.
Yeah. Actually, they push them down with poles,
too. Oh, that's...
Too.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Like,
It's rough. Yeah.
He just sees all these different persecutions. Like, so much of the movie is like him, like, grappling with, because the Japanese are saying, all you've got to do is step on this icon of Christ.
Yeah.
You don't have to say anything. All you got to do is put your foot on it. You don't even have to mean it.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it and go back to your hut and do whatever you want to do. You just got to step on it.
But
that's how it starts.
Yeah. But it gets worse and worse because what's the guy, the Inquisitor?
Yeah.
He pretty much says, all right, the reason for their suffering is because you won't apostatize.
Right.
So
because he starts revealing that the people in the boats, like with the mats wrapped around them, I think that's the first time he gets exposed to the idea that these people have recanted.
Yeah.
Those are people who have apostatized and trampled on the icon, but because he won't, they're going to kill them.
Yeah. So it's a hard film to watch. And it encroaches on 3 hours. And much of this movie is you feeling like you're trapped and unable to really do anything else. And I think the cinematography really lends itself to that. For the first part of the movie, when they're in Portugal, a lot of the cinematography is kind of like very stately and just kind of
and open, like when they're in that church, like
it's
like
extremely open. And then even when they get to the main mountains and stuff like that, it's just wide panning shots and stuff.
I mean, the shots of Japan are beautiful.
Oh, they absolutely are.
They're amazing.
But then he gets captured, and a lot of the shots are, like, between bars. Like, you're looking out through bars at, like, other people being persecuted.
Or you're in, like, a corner, like they'll have shots that are like kind of from above, like in a corner above him, and like they'll move the camera, but it can only move a little bit.
Yeah.
So you feel trapped.
Yeah. It's like he's pacing in a cage, like a tiger kind of thing.
And it's a lot of conversations. Like,
yeah.
This movie is a lot of this guy trying to convince him to renounce his faith. The Inquisitor trying to get the priest to renounce his faith, and the priest giving him reasons why he won't. And it kind of just keeps going like that until
he finally meets Father Vieira, and
he's apostatized. Already,
yes. And his reason for it is because he can't stand to watch other people suffering because of his fate. And
he's like living as a Buddhist now.
Yes and no. It's implied that he's living as a Buddhist.
He's writing papers.
Yes.
That are against Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or translating papers, I think it was. Or was he actually writing?
No, he was writing.
Now? Okay.
Because the Inquisitor was praising his writing.
Okay. Yeah. But it's hard to watch. And as a Christian, it's something I almost feel like everybody should see.
I know, like... If you've seen Passion of the Christ, you can handle this.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like,
graphic or anything like that.
There is one person who gets their head cut off.
Okay, yeah, it is kind of, I mean, as far as, like, graphic but compared to, like, the torture that happens
right,
in
but
Passion.
That's the only thing
yeah.
that, in this movie, that's super graphic. Everything mm-hmm. else is people dying by drowning,
mm-hmm.
people, like, being hung up by their ankles until they pass out and die. Like,
or they cut a little yeah. nick behind their ear so that the blood flows out and it just makes it worse.
Yeah, but yeah. even that, like, it's not like you see gushes of blood no. happen on screen. It's a remark, like, for its subject matter, it's a remarkably tame movie, especially from somebody like Scorsese, who does not shy away from violence.
And especially coming off of Wolf of Wall Street, he went from two yeah. extreme opposites, I feel like, because yeah. Wolf of Wall Street
is loud,
like,
and boisterous, it's, and excess.
It's a journey into hedonism, pretty much. Yeah. And this is pretty much just, like, the exact opposite. Very quiet, very withdrawn, very somber throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, and I think like, what's great about this movie for Christians is that it's not the happy-go-lucky Christian movie. This is a movie that's really trying to grapple with, if you really believe these things with all of your heart, what does that mean
yeah.
when it's put to the test? What does it mean when the trials in your life are not things like, I got cut off on my way to work and I was 5 minutes late, so my boss got mad at me. What about when the trials are, you literally don't have enough food to eat? Like somebody gave you food to eat today. It was a couple of beans. And that means they don't get a couple of beans today.
Yeah.
They just starve. Like, what does it mean when somebody is doggedly pursuing you?
Yeah.
You know?
Like, okay, I guess you take a look at films like the God's Not Dead series. I haven't seen them, but we've talked extensively about them on the show and how they kind of have a persecution complex. And it's like, okay, we've got it pretty well off if you look back at history.
And also, like, if you look at the difference between the persecutors, quote unquote, in God's Not Dead,
yeah,
as opposed to the persecutors in Silence, like, I feel like the ones in Silence, you get it. You get where they're coming from. Like the Inquisitor, and he starts talking about, like, why Christianity doesn't work here and why we have to get rid of it and why. And it's like, oh, man, I totally understand. Like, this is, he sees the imperialism coming on its heels.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that Portugal wants in and Spain wants in and England wants in. And if we start letting them in, they'll tear this country apart. He totally understands.
Yep, he does. And some of the acting in this is pretty incredible. I was actually kind of shocked because Andrew Garfield got a nomination this year, or for 2017, but it wasn't for Silence. It was actually for Hacksaw Ridge.
And I think this is way...
Yeah.
Like, his performance in this is way better.
Actually, yeah. This was the movie that cost him and Emma... What's-her-face? Their relationship. Emma Stone.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So... fun little fact right there. If you keep up with the tabloids, I don't. But working for the show I do, I sometimes hear that. So
yeah, I because I think he's just phenomenal in this movie.
Adam Driver too, who
like all of the acting in this mm-hmm. movie is great.
Yeah, it really like, is.
The moment at the end, because we're definitely spoiling this movie. Like, if you haven't considered this spoilers,
yeah.
this definitely is.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, when he apostatizes.
And he does it because he can literally hear people wailing in the background. And the Inquisitor is like, look, these people are all suffering because of you. And he hears God's voice. And I can't remember exactly what he says, but he says, like, step on my face or something
yeah,
like that.
And also, like, just the way this is shot.
Yeah.
Too. It's so still.
It's very,
so quiet.
It's very much God is talking directly to him.
The most soothing voice you've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was holding my breath during the scene.
Yeah.
And it's a close-up of this painting of Jesus, and he's saying, go ahead, step. I was born into this world to bear men's suffering. And I just get, like, I have chills right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
From saying that.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he does, and those men are relieved, but he has to, the rest of his life, live as a Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, like, because growing up, like, I've heard so many stories about, like, martyrs and people who fought the fight to the death and all of that kind of thing. And if you'd have told me that I was going to, like, watch a guy step on an icon of Christ and I was going to understand, I was going to watch it and say, that might be one of the most profound religious experiences I've ever had in a movie.
Yeah.
I would never have believed that was possible.
It puts you in his shoes. And I mean, the length of the movie absolutely does that, because you understand everything that he's gone through. You've seen
everything.
They
really walk you
through it. Yeah, they really do. Like, they force you to sit through. Like, there may be some long shots. There may be some long moments where you're like, all right, nothing's happening here. But it is. I mean, like, you're stuck in there with him, and you're watching all these horrible things
happen.
And you're
just mulling over and over and over in your brain.
What would I do? What would I do? Would I be able to get through this? Like,
and also, like, to hear, because I don't think that it's God's voice. I think it's
his interpretation of what God is saying to him to help him justify doing it.
Right. But I also don't think that necessarily means that it's wrong.
No, I don't.
But what is important in that scene to me is to hear that, like, what he's really saying is, Christ can cover my sins. And even if this is wrong, in some sense, it saves the lives of people, and God loves people, and I love those people.
Yeah.
And just like Kichiro, or however you say his name, just like him, like, I still believe that God loves him.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, I don't know, it's just it's and I think that, like, the movie really is pushing you to a point of asking yourself the question of what faith really is, like, what belief really is.
Absolutely. There's another interesting moment too, actually, when the Inquisitor, he comes back to Andrew Garfield's character Rodriguez, and he's pretty much just like, is it your glory is their suffering, or something like that? And it's pretty much just like, just because you think that you're suffering, they're actually suffering. You consider yourself, like, you think of yourself as Jesus right now in this moment. You're bearing all the suffering.
That part.
And he's like, they don't think of it like that. They're not arrogant enough to think that they're Jesus suffering like this. He's like, you're the only one that's arrogant. You're the one that's sinning right now. And that was so powerful to me. Like, thinking, okay, if you have the opportunity to save some people right here, what are you honestly going to do?
Yeah.
And like, that's a question, like, I've never been put in that situation before. And God willing, I never will, where I have to choose what's going to happen if I'm going to be a martyr, because I don't know what I would say. Like, I want to believe that I would be able to say, no, I believe in God, and please shoot me right now. But I mean, I've never stared down a gun before. I don't know what that's going to be like.
Yeah. Like, and it, like, I feel like this movie, it's like a meditation on when God seems silent
or distant
and
even
far away.
Mm-hmm.
When it is, but also, like, it's a meditation on the nature of faith. And, like, because I think that it is important at the end. I know a lot of people feel like it was kind of a cop-out to have him holding the crucifix at the end.
And actually, I'm going to interject really quick. That wasn't in the book, by the way. So the book ends with just him going into his grave, pretty much, and you don't know whether or not he was still a Christian.
But I think that statement is really important for someone like Scorsese, because he wanted to be a priest.
Yeah.
And, like,
he looks like he could be one.
Yeah. And I think that, like, deep down, in whatever way that faith shapes him, like, you can't watch this movie and tell me that Martin Scorsese doesn't believe in God and in Jesus Christ specifically.
Yeah.
And, like, that he's not a man of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
Like, yeah, he makes bad movies. Bad. I'm sorry. I'm doing quotes right here. Bad movies. Like, yeah. Films that have objectionable content in them. But he still, like, you can tell. Like, there's so much religious iconography throughout all of his films, if you think about it. Like, even in Departed, there's so much Catholicism that goes on in there. There is in Goodfellas, too. There's actually a lot, too.
Yeah, and I think, like, for him, like, this movie is really an exploration of the idea that I may not look like what you would think of as a Christian. But at my death, I have that crucifix in my hand, and that is what I'm clinging to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really, that's an amazing thing to put in a movie.
Yeah, it really
like,
is.
A movie like this. Like, yeah. It's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish more people would see this movie and not kind of just hear that it's about some priests who like get tortured and then deny the faith.
Yeah.
And would understand that this movie is about something so much more powerful than that.
Yeah. It's a hard movie to recommend to people though, because like, I feel like I recommended it to my roommate and he was like, yeah, I watched the first 20 minutes of that. And I was like, yep, that makes sense, because it is a hard movie to get through. But purposefully so.
Yeah.
I
think that this is the sort of movie that really that like Bible study groups should watch together, because like having other people there with you helps kind of keep you in the moment so that you can't get up and
walk around.
Yeah. Just take a break.
Food,
yeah. Or decide not to watch the rest of it.
You
have to watch the rest of it, 'cause we're all here.
Yep.
This is a perfect movie for things like that. As long as it's all adults.
Yeah. Yeah.
Youth groups, no.
Yeah, probably not. Overall, I mean, this is the kind of movie that I would love to see Christian filmmakers aspire to make.
Yeah.
And I think we've talked about this plenty of times before. There's differences in Christian films. There's the movies that are made by Christian studios for Christian audiences. There's the kind that have Christian messages in them, like we talked about Dead Man Walking a little while ago. And this is one that I definitely feel like would fall in there. Well, actually,
no,
I feel like there's a third category,
so.
Because this is a movie about the church even. And it just has all these elements in it. I would say,
yeah,
this is
but
a
it's
third
also
kind of
like
movie.
this is a movie that is not by a Christian studio, but it is by a Christian auteur.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to make a movie that's about his faith.
Yeah.
And what do you know? It's better than the ones that studios put out that are like Christian studios that are just made to get Christians into the theater. When a guy decides that he's going to make a Christian movie that reflects his faith, no matter whether it gets people in the door or not, it ends up being better.
Yeah.
What a surprise.
I mean, I think you could put Martin Scorsese's name on anything and like most film school like buffs would flock to the theater.
Yeah, but that
doesn't
make something a successful movie.
That's
like
true.
I don't know what the budget of this movie is, but I'm like this.
It was less than Wolf of Wall Street, I'm sure.
Well, and I'm sure that its take home was too.
Yeah. Like, well, and this was a passion project of his for like 25 years, I think, too. So and it took him that long to get this movie made. So
yeah, I love this movie. It's not one that I want to watch all the time or anything like that.
It'll probably be another 2 or 3 years before I even think about trying to watch this movie again.
But, yeah, but if you are a Christian, I can't recommend this movie highly enough.
Yeah.
Especially, like, I mean, okay, not especially, because I think that it's a meaningful movie spiritually, but also, as a side benefit, a lot of the people that might see this movie won't ever see another Martin Scorsese movie. And just so that you can see what a great director he is, watch this one.
Now, I haven't seen Last Temptation of Christ. I actually own
I've
it.
Never seen it either.
I picked it up when Criterion was doing one of their sales because I meant to do a review on it and I still haven't yet. I know there's one scene that's very controversial, and the rest of it is actually supposed to depict Jesus in a pretty normal way. But that temptation scene is supposed to be him thinking about getting off the cross and sleeping with Mary Magdalene instead. Not specifically just that, but that's the scene that got everybody, there was a big hubbub about it.
Yeah.
I would be interested to see how that movie compares.
I think that I have less interest in that one because of Willem Dafoe. Because Andrew Garfield, I know, through the filming of this movie, had a really profound respect for, like, and a growing respect for the church and for Christ. And, like, this is a very meaningful film to him because he said that, like, he really discovered a lot about God. Whereas Willem Dafoe I'm not going to say he's a horrible person or anything like that, but he's not a person who loves God. Like, I believe he's an atheist.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Like, so I just don't really know how I feel about watching him play Jesus, because he's not going to do it in a very.
That's all speculation, though.
Yeah,
I will watch the movie and I'll get back to you. So
it
might take me until, like, you know, next Easter or something like that, because that's another long.
Yeah. Well, you tell me what you think of it, and maybe I'll watch it after that.
That sounds good.
I would prefer to hear from some other people whose opinions I respect first.
That's fair. I feel like I'm kind of drawn to the controversy around this one too. And I mean, it's like a big budget Jesus story. I mean, like, yeah.
Right. That's the other thing that kind of, like, makes me dubious of it, is like how much of the attention this movie got. Is it because of the controversy, or is it actually a good film besides that?
It got a lot of Oscar nominations, actually.
Was that because of the controversy, or because of, see, that's the,
I guess,
that's
yeah,
the question.
You could honestly say that about, like, a lot of movies.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I mean, Avatar got a lot of Oscar nominations, so.
Yeah, because of the controversy. All right. Well, let's just leave it on a lighter note like that.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on the True Myth Media podcast. We hope that you enjoyed our discussion. Hopefully, you'll check out this movie. Let us know if you're going to, or if you have other movies that really stand out to you as especially spiritually significant. And let us know if you'd like to hear our thoughts on any other movies that you'd like us to check out, review on the website or whatever. You can always follow us on Twitter at True Myth Media, and follow us on our website at truemythmedia.com. Leave us a review in iTunes, and farewell, friends.
Peace.